I created Species Nutrition with one mission in mind: to provide bodybuilders and serious athletes with no-nonsense supplements that work. I put my name and reputation on every bottle of Species Nutrition products. If you want to be your absolute best, join the evolution. Happy New Year's Eve to all you guys out there who are watching live. I'm Dave Palumbo, of course. This is the final Heavy Muscle Radio show of the year, and it's going to be a great one. Whoever around is going to be joining us, but really, we do have a star-studded cast because bodybuilding legend and Hall of Famer and my good friend Kevin Levroni is joining us tonight. Kevin, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Dave. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you for taking time out of your New Year's Eve celebrations to join us, man. That was very nice of you.
No problem. It's a safe place. You know, we just normally stay home.
That's right. No trouble. No trouble. I
think. No, definitely.
We're also, of course, joined by Larry Pollock and Armand the DB. You know, I had to ask you, were you ever one of these guys that went out on New Year's Eve? Because I know when I was bodybuilding, I would just like either lay low, or I think early in my career, I was like bouncing on New Year's Eve, like just to make money and stuff.
No, I didn't do anything. We were on the contract, man. So it was like, right. I think around this time, New Year's, we're trying to, let's see, January. Training for the Arnold Classic.
That's right. You'd be dieting right now.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
That's what the heck is that? Larry, you making a shake over there or something?
No, I was blasting the podcast on Instagram, and some video popped up.
Larry, what did you used to do on New Year's? I know now you don't do anything. Obviously, we're old now. We don't go out.
I did everything.
Oh, you were like a crazy guy on New Year's Eve?
I don't know about crazy, but I mean, growing up, I bounced in nightclubs.
Yeah, yeah.
And then later, I always did something.
Right.
I was in Las Vegas or God knows where.
Yeah. Armand, do you ever have any crazy, you know, you always have something, some crazy story that's happened to you somewhere.
I usually just work New Year's, like bouncing too. I bounced up until like 3 years ago, like 2-3 years ago. Then I quit. I had a real bad incident. Then I quit because it got a little, wasn't worth the money. So
I remember New Year's Eve, they would pay double time. So that's why I like to work on New Year's. At least when I had no money in the beginning, you know, I used to do that. But, and then you kind of get
to work the line too, so you can make more money and people in line.
Yeah. I only did it for like 2 years, though. I didn't really like beating people up. You know, some of these bouncers like their job way, way too much.
You really can't beat them. I mean, they can sue you, and you got to be really careful because, you know, the law is you're supposed to, you know, talk.
In the 90s, you can do whatever you wanted.
Well, no, yeah, in the 90s.
Beat people up in the 90s, right, Kevin?
Yeah, I think, yeah, definitely, for sure. New Year's is always exciting because I think people, if they're normally drinkers, they just drink more. Everybody goes to the limit on New Year's. Yeah. It's just like all out, right? Yeah. So I can imagine what it used to be like, or when you guys are out there bouncing on New Year's. Oh, yeah. I mean, that had to be one of the most exciting extravaganzas to ever witness, you know?
So, it was a big ripoff, too, New Year's. I remember the clubs always charged, like, you know, triple what they normally would, or quadruple. You know, they'd give you like a free like food buffet that no one was eating because, you know, everyone was just drinking. And,
it's like $200 in Dallas right now.
$200. Yeah, yeah, it's expensive.
Did they even raise drinks up on New Year's?
Yeah, usually at the clubs they'd hand pass out. If you pay $200 to get in, they'd give you like a champagne glass and you'd, you know, toast everyone and everything like that. But it was, you know, it's really for clubs. It's a money making place. I remember going to the city a few times, and with friends who wanted to go out. These guys had money, and I mean, they were dropped $10,000, you know, to get like 10 of us into a club, and it was expensive, you know, bottles,
buying tables and bottles.
Yeah, it was, you know,
a regular bottle of vodka normally costs what, $35 or $27 back then. They sell it for what, $375 days?
Yeah, it was like $350 a bottle or something like that. It was crazy. It was crazy.
Like $1,500 now.
Is it that much? Holy shit.
Yeah, $1,500.
That's crazy.
What?
Yeah.
For a bottle of vodka?
You get a table. You got to do that to get a table. So
everyone wants to be in the VIP section, and it's like, I think it's more of like a status thing to, you know, to say, hey, I'm going to be in the club in the VIP section with. And they always get like one celebrity to come to the club, you know, so that, you know, everyone wants to go there. Just, oh, I heard this guy's going to be here, and this DJ spinning. I remember the sound. I think I went to the Sound Factory once. I got to ask Valentino about that. I think they used to have New Year's Eve parties too that were pretty crazy. But their parties wouldn't start till like 5 a.m, you know. It's crazy.
I used to set up the Europa after party in Dallas.
Right.
The manager, Matt, he used to have me like set it up. He thought I knew a lot of people, which I guess I did. But
right.
Kevin, you were there you came there 1 year. I let you in. You were by yourself. You came by yourself. It was in Dallas. It's probably, I don't know, 10, 12 years ago.
Do you remember that, Kev?
Probably
Dallas, Europa. After party,
Phil Heath was there. Phil Heath was wild. He was going nuts in the club that night. But yeah, you
know, Craig Titus used to throw the craziest parties actually back in the day.
But I'm sure
that was back in probably around 2002, 2003, in that time frame. But then it kind of died off after that. You know, before we get into I want to talk about the best stories of 2023, but I want to just mention that we have a Species Nutrition New Year's sale. It's going to take place tomorrow only, and it's going to be 30% off the entire speciesnutrition.com website if you put the coupon code 2024, and that's 2024 on checkout. You get 30% off. You spend $50 or more, you know, after the sale is over, you know, after you've already got the discount, $50 or more, you can either get a free Isolize cookies and cream, or you can get a free Fruit Punch Fiberlize. So,
whoa, amazing!
If you spend $30 or $50 or more, and then obviously you're gonna get the 30% off the entire website, you know, with 2024. Who's making all that? Is that you, Mr. G? Stop making noise. I'm doing my sales pitch here. So it's gonna be for New Year's only while supplies last. Spend $50 or more, you get a free Fiberlize Fruit Punch flavor or cookies and cream 22 serving while supplies last. And you'll get 30% off the entire site if you use the coupon code 2024. Free shipping on orders in the continental United States if you spend more than $100. So check that out. That'll be all day New Year's Day. And then that'll be it. So it's a one-day sale. So check it out. All right.
All day. What's that coupon code again, Dave?
2024.
2024.
Yeah.
Don't forget to press the like button and the subscribe button.
You. What are you doing over there? Hold on. What happened to Lavroni? We lost him. I think you scared Lavroni away.
Mr. No.
Do you have the camera on your ceiling fan and I can't see your face?
You can see my face?
No, not really. I kind of see the top of your hat.
All right, hold on. Let me see.
Can you, can't you see what you're looking at? Where did Lavroni?
Oh, you know what? The stupid camera's not working.
I think you really scared Lavroni away. I
knew it looks like a horror film. You're about to kill somebody.
You know what it is? My stupid the camera I got. I don't have my camera guy with me, so I'm at Mike's house. I'm in the back on the golf course. They're shooting off fireworks and stuff.
My God.
Okay. Right. Kevin, where is Kevin anyway? Is he?
I don't know. He lost him for a second.
No, is he in the U.S.?
No, he's in Maryland. He's at his home. Let me text him again so we can get him back here.
You ever use injectable L-carnitine?
I have, and I've heard about it a lot, but I haven't tried it.
Kids are crazy about it now. Like, all I get asked is about, like, injectable L-carnitine. I'm like, a lot of naturals are into it. I'm like, it's like, they're like, isn't like the holy grail of burning fat? I'm like, I mean, it gets a little bit better absorption, but not, I mean, we used to use it back in the day. Remember, did you ever use Cardispan, Dave? Cardispan?
Yeah, that was like was that a prescription version of it? Hey, Kev.
Mexico. It had L-carnitine and something else that we didn't know what it was, but it actually worked. I don't know what was in it, though.
George, why are you calling me? You're calling me on your phone, George. Come on, get your act together over there.
It's together.
You know what? I've been getting a lot of people asking me also, Armand, about injectable L-carnitine.
Yeah.
I don't know what the big craze is. You know, Kevin, you've seen this probably over the years. There's always like some supplement that's like the cool supplement of the day. where everyone's like, is that's all they talk about how great it is. And then it kind of goes out of fashion, and then no one hears about it for like 20 years, you know.
Mm-hmm.
L-carnitine's job, believe it or not, inside the cell is to transport long chain fats into the mitochondria, which is where they're burned for energy. So fats get oxidized inside the mitochondria of the cell. In order to get in there, you need L-carnitine. So if you have an L-carnitine deficiency, you might not be transporting long-chain fatty acids, you know, into the mitochondria at optimal rates. So in those cases, taking some supplementation of L-carnitine can help out. Not many people, if you eat a lot of red meat and stuff like that, are deficient in L-carnitine, however. The problem with the oral L-carnitine, believe it or not, is it's not that absorbable orally. So when you inject it like intramuscularly, it goes right into the bloodstream. So its absorption rate is a little better. But I haven't seen too many people think about it. Most bodybuilders eat like 6 times a day. So they probably get enough L-carnitine in the foods they're eating, the chicken and the meat. If you happen to be like a fish eater only, or you only do whey protein and eggs, you might be a little deficient and you might notice a little boost from it. But I think the claims that people are making about it doing pretty much everything from healing them to burning fat to this, to that, I think they're a little over-exaggerated.
Do you know how much of it that they're talking about that actually you need, or is there a window?
What are you hearing, Armand, in terms of dosages that people are taking?
They're just shooting as much as they can.
Wait.
Wherever they can, like spot injecting. I was at the gym yesterday.
Yeah, they think it burns fat like wherever you inject it, which is not true. Yeah.
No.
Yeah. I had three different kids ask me. They follow me on TikTok. They're like, you know, asked me about it. I was like, are you going to notice much? Not really. You know, does it work? Yeah, it works. It's L-carnitine, but it's not like, it's like the holy grail of like, you know, naturals. They think, you know, they're going to use this and it's going to just strip the fat off of them. One kid was like, you know, 300 pounds asking me, you know, this L-carnitine burns fat.
Right.
I'm like,
I know people are taking 1 to 2 grams orally, you know, per day. That's usually an oral dosage. I know that Titan Medical Center sells injectable L-carnitine, and I have some in my refrigerator that they sent me that I used a couple times just to see how it felt, because I wanted to see what all the hype was about. And I didn't feel much of a difference, but I'm probably not L-carnitine deficient. So I think some people might get better results from it, because depending on what the levels of their L-carnitine in their body are, you know, there are people who are definitely deficient. Oh, we got a tip already. We'll do that.
How about just the diet? How about that? Eating properly.
Oh, we got a Lavroni question here and the guy paid $5 for it. So let's Kevin, when you were in your band days, did you drink and do you still jam? They want to know.
Oh, you mean when I was on getting ready to go on stage and play music?
Yeah, like when you were in the band.
Sure,
you
know? Yeah, of course. Yeah.
What was your choice of drink back then?
Jack Daniels and Coca-Cola, of course.
Regular Coke or Coke?
Nah, regular Coke. Yeah.
Really? Are you a hardcore? Okay.
Yeah.
Do you still play?
Every now and then I'll play around. You know, right?
Yeah.
Play with the piano and stuff like that. Yeah.
9-8, you play piano. Do you, yeah. And obviously we know you're singing because you just did that music video the other day, you know, that we put up.
Yeah. 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 That keeps me somewhat, you know, it's my hobby, man. It keeps me sanitized.
Kevin's like a Renaissance man. He does dabbles in a little everything. And if you ask him, if you talk to him long enough, you'll find that he has other skills that you don't know he has that he doesn't even mention.
Because he's an artist, Dave.
Yes.
He's not. And it, you know, whether it's with his body or remember the last time I saw you, Kevin, was at the Arnold when we had the stage with MD, and you just finished acting. Remember you were in it?
Yes,
in the movie?
Yeah.
You came up on stage, I think, and took the
microphone. Yeah.
Initially, what would you do? You would compete, and then you would travel with full blown for how many months and not work out?
Probably about three months, 3.5 months. Well, I wouldn't work out for about, I don't know, 7 months maybe.
Oh, wow.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. But actually, you know what? As people say, if you had to train all year round, I got burnt out really quick. I probably would have reached my peak, really fast, because my body was hyper responding and everything. So I think it probably helped me when I took off and, you know, let my body go down and then boom, come back like that. I think it helped.
I don't think you would have done it if you didn't think your body. Once you realized that your body came right back like that, that obviously was like your superpower almost. Like you
could, yeah,
you know.
But it was crazy how I even stumbled across that, because I tore my chest and it didn't work out for 6 or 7 months. You know,
nothing.
And my body atrophied and everything went away.
Right.
And then they're like, well, you got to be on stage. Back then, the Mr. Olympia was in September. You got to be on stage or else you're going to lose your contract. Link Conkright was blowing my phone up. And Joe Weider, you got to go out there. It was like, oh, man, flies on you know what. I was like, shit, man. So then I was like, oh, man. So I started doing push-ups in June, July, August, September. Somehow September, I was back on stage.
He was doing push-ups in June, and he was on the Olympia stage. What'd you take, fourth?
I got fifth that year. Oh,
that's
so. That's what I knew. That's what I knew, man. I was like, "What in the world just happened?"
I wanted to
because I got second in Olympia, and then I tore my pec, and I just stopped training because I couldn't do anything. I was like in this thing like this, you know, and I had to have two operations. One was 12 hours, the other one was 8 hours because it got infected.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Hindered everything. Yeah, my whole right side atrophied. I had to learn how to do everything with my right hand. I mean, my left arm. So I couldn't even do a push-up because I blew out my pectoralis major and minor and snapped my tendon also.
Snapped from
it came, you know, detached everything. So it was really a
That surgeon did a good job on you. He really did a good job fixing it. If it was that severe. That
He went underneath my underneath.
You didn't have a scar. You didn't have a scar.
He didn't cut me here. And all the guys previously, you know, before me, they got cut here. And that's why I think it had something to do with the way that they looked. The repair wasn't really normal. You know what I mean?
Right, you could tell.
So he went in underneath my armpit and opened up a dead body first, and he said, "Hey, I can do it." So,
is that what he said? He practiced on that.
He did. He said, "I opened up a cadaver, and I figured out that I can get to it." I said, "You did that?" I said, "Man, you're crazy, just like me." So, kind of worked out.
You got lucky, man.
I got lucky. I got real lucky. Yeah, he's actually my orthopedic surgeon to this day.
Yeah. Oh, you still see him? Wow, he must have been young.
I still see him, man. Yeah.
You know, those guys that were competing against you had no clue how severe your pec injury was. They probably thought you were faking the whole thing because.
Well, they thought I was bullshitting.
Because you didn't. Yeah. You couldn't tell the difference, really. I mean, you had a little divot there, but it wasn't much of a. No one would have believed you that if you would have told my only trainer, you know, 8 weeks or 10 weeks to the show.
Like it blew out. I was benching 600 pounds and, you know, 600 pound liftoff. It was one guy behind me.
Right.
And it came down and I went to push it up and it went up. And then I came down for a second rep and halfway up, I just heard it rip. Like you could just, I mean, that's 600 pounds, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, he was pulling off and I was pushing. It was, and I knew what happened cause I heard it. You can just hear it ripping through your body and everything.
Right.
I was like, shit, man. I went in the bathroom. It was in the wintertime. Went in the bathroom, put on a hoodie, and drove right to the hospital.
Wow. Yeah.
I didn't say anything. I didn't want to tell anybody anything because when you tell someone you tore your pec, you know, it's over.
Career's over. Yeah.
Just forget about it.
Was it painful, Kev? Were you in a lot of pain?
Nah, it wasn't a lot of pain. It was this – I was pissed off. I was disappointed.
Yeah.
I was nervous. I was scared. I think I called Jim May and I told him I bruised my chest doing 50 pounds dumbbell flies. So that was a lie.
Yeah, I was lifting 25 pounds. You know,
yeah, because, you know, if you say you blew it out, he's like, well, how did you do it? I was like, oh, I was just, you know, doing some flies. I don't want to say benching 600.
Yeah. What are you doing? What are you, crazy?
Yeah, because
I was lifting some big weights back in the day. Yeah.
Well, in other sports,
just a freaky thing. Yeah. But I've learned so much from it, though. I've learned to, you know, just to trust your instincts. People tell you can't do something. They don't know shit, right? And, you know, the mind, man, you know, going through that and facing losing your contract, your whole body's, you know, whole body's just going through this whole transition. You get depressed, you just go to that dark place, and and you don't know what's going to happen. I had no idea what I was going to look like, because I went down to 224 pounds.
Wow. Yeah.
And that was my first experience of the transition from going down and back up. You know, it took me 7 months to lose from to go from 248. That's where I was when I came home, and to lose 30 pounds of muscle. It was went like that. And I didn't know, you know, I didn't know if this thing was even attached right or anything. So it was a mental phase. And I knew that if I didn't go back and compete, I would have lost my contract. And if I didn't do well, then my career would have been over. But it was like, I didn't know if he fixed me or nothing. So I was tripping for a while, man. I was like,
I don't blame you. That's, I mean, you were at the top of your career too already. I mean, this is your second at the Olympia behind
York. And then at fifth, and then everybody thought I was bullshitting. So then, and that's when I decide to bring the doctor to the Arnold Classic, because I had six more months to train.
Right.
And I said, if I got 6 months, I'm gonna put something on their ass, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So and I went and did the Arnold, and I won.
He won the '94 Arnold.
We released all those pictures in the magazine. So.
Yeah, that I mean, that was definitely a great comeback for you.
But no, man, I going back to the whole part. I mean, I owned a gym. You know, it was a 15,000 square foot gym.
Beautiful gym.
Yeah, Dave, you've seen it.
Yeah.
And I was managing it and just doing that and everything. That was a lot of stress as well, owning that and making sure the bills are paid every month. My overhead was like $67,000 a month back then.
That's a lot.
And I had a lot of employees, and I just opened a gym in 1993. And at the same time, I was competing. So I had other things that was taking up my, you know, business. Well,
it kept you occupied. That probably helped you get through the whole injury thing.
It helped me. Definitely helped me.
You're like when you do something, you do 100%, you know?
Yeah. I definitely get into, studying about it and seeing what works, but you know, nobody wants to be a failure. So I had to give my gym that attention as well as training and everything else, you know.
What did you learn from the gym business? I mean, did you come take anything away?
I learned from the gym business.
Not to have a gym.
The most important, the best part about owning the gym is the day you open and the day you close. Yeah.
Really?
It's crazy. Yeah. Everything else in between, you're dealing with freaks, you're dealing with weirdos, you're dealing with
Larry has a gym, he knows all about
the
it,
types of personalities coming into a gym. You got the perverts, you got everything. It was a roller coaster ride, bro.
It was hard. That gym was hardcore though too. There was a lot of, like, you know, bodybuilders in that gym.
Yeah, it was nice. You know, I used to crank the music up, and I love hardcore rock and roll music, right? Yeah. That's what I trained off of.
Right.
And then you got the black guys that come in and they don't like it. They want to hear the rap music. You got to deal with all that, man.
When Kevin trained, his music was on, and when he left, then I think they changed the music.
So, what was your music, Kevin? You listened to heavy Creed, metal,
right? Creed. Yeah,
I mean, I would do the Creed thing when I get close to the shows. I would do Metallica. I would do my favorite was Godsmack, though, man. You know, Sully, East Coast guys. I mean, he's hardcore. I love listening to Godsmack and. Alice in Chains back then, you know, in the 90s and stuff, you know, STP, Stone Temple Pilots, those, you know, that was it for me, man. Metallica.
Kevin liked his music. I used to, because Kevin, people don't realize this, but Kevin would drive to every show. He would never fly. Mm-hmm. He would drive. And I used to say, why are you driving so far? You just get in an airplane. It's an hour to Columbus, Ohio. He's like, nah, I play my music. I listen to my tunes. I take my time. I drive there.
Yeah,
you don't mind driving. It didn't bother you, you know.
Well, the whole thing about that, Dave, was see flying. When you fly, people don't realize that your body goes to another altitude and you hold water.
Right. Yeah. No. That's the reason you told me. Yeah.
You know. Yeah. Definitely. But I enjoyed you know, relaxing. You know, taking.
You get in the car and you were the most laid back person I ever. You were like Ronnie. You didn't. I never saw you get upset. You kind of just were like chilling all the time, and you.
Yeah,
kind of-
I mean, because you can complain, nothing's going to change. The judges are going to make their mind up, you know, and it's going. The chips are all I knew was I'd done everything I possibly could do. You helped me out for that Arnold that time, you know. So
yeah,
when you know that you've done every single thing that you can do, right. and you've made all of, you believe the right choices. You just go into a show relaxed and not cocky, but you're confident, you know, and right. everything just ends up working out, whether you're first or fifth or no matter where you place. As long as yeah. you know that you've done everything that you possibly can do,
right.
then, you know, I was always okay with that.
Yeah, no, you had a good attitude about that. All right, guys, let's discuss 2023. It's a crazy year, you know, for I think the world in general, but. Definitely for our bodybuilding world, and we saw a change in the Olympia title. But I want to give you know, sometimes we don't really give credit to, like, you know, some of the people. We always talk about men's open bodybuilding. So I kind of made a list of 10 people that kind of made, you know, or 10 incidents in 2023 that kind of made an impact. Well, so I'll start. This is not in any particular order. I didn't rank them, but I want to start with number 10 because, you know, men's physique the past couple of years has gotten to the point where the guys have just gotten unbelievable. The physiques, you know, they're almost better than the bodybuilding physiques, the upper bodies on these guys. And Ryan Terry, who had been a guy who had been, you know, kind of nipping at the heels of some of these top guys for a lot of years, kind of dropped off. And then he showed up this year and he brought a look that won him the Olympia title. And I have to say, I don't think I've seen in men's physique a guy who kind of was going in the other direction make another surge and take the title. So I think that one of the 10 most significant stories, one of them has to be Ryan Terry winning the Olympia. What do you got? What's your guys' feedback, Armand?
Good for Ryan.
But what do you think of his physique? I mean, do you think it was a victory? Or do you think that I don't think it was coming.
I know, like, Jeremy came back and then he was real watery or flat or whatever on stage. So yeah, when you come back, he looked really good, and the guys are so big now, you know. People don't realize their upper bodies, how big their upper bodies are, and to keep that really tiny waist and get those big wide shoulders. They're training really hard now. It's not like it was 10 years ago when the physique guys were a lot smaller. So, you know.
You know, but we were seeing guys like Aaron Banks and winning. Yeah. The Olympia the past year and the Arnold. And then, you know, all of a sudden they went from that big, huge structure with small waist to Ryan, who's kind of just like almost like a piece of granite. He kind of reminds me of like Stallone in like the Rambo movies back in the day, you know, that kind of look, you know, very grainy, you know, nasty, gnarly looking, you know, abs and stuff like that. Kev, what do you think of his physique what do you think of men's physique in general?
I mean, I think it's, you know, like you were saying, I've actually looking at it, you know, online, and then actually seeing those guys backstage, right? Their upper bodies, I mean, their physiques are phenomenal. They're big. They're a lot bigger than what they perceive to be, you know, when you're not at a show, when you're not looking at them, you know, online. But I was impressed, man. Impressed. They have, actually, Ryan has good structure, looks good, and just came in shape. You know, he just came in shape, and it looks great.
Yeah, you know, when you look, if you look at the top group right here, hold on, I'll zoom in a little bit. We can get a little better look here. But, I mean, some of these guys were Olympia champs. Brandon Hendrickson was an Olympia champ, number two, second place. Aaron Banks, you know, was an Olympia champ, you know, before that. So this was, you know, very rarely in body, and you don't see it in bodybuilding, we have like three or four Olympia champs in the lineup, you know, competing against each other. I mean, and I don't even, to be honest with you, I don't even know what really won it for Ryan over some of these guys who have the bigger structures. You know, it seemed like maybe his conditioning was a little better. I still have trouble understanding exactly, you know, what they're looking for in men's physique, but
yeah,
I mean, the polish,
you know, for, you know, the other guys who didn't actually win, they still are winners, right? Because it's like on that night, that given day, that night in that moment, you know, it's all up in the air as far as opinion, you know, and I always, they have to keep in mind that, you know, hey, that's that Olympia stage, but, you know, it could have went either way. I mean, that's how That's how close it was.
I almost think that men's physique is kind of like similar to bikini in the sense that everyone looks so good. You can almost rationalize anyone in that top five winning the event, you know, that kind of thing.
You know, yeah, I mean, when I was judging, you know, for 7 years, it was really hard. Bodybuilding's easy, but it was really hard to judge bikini and men's physique because you got the guys, you know, here's the guys that look good, here's the guys that look bad, and then, like, the guys that look good, it could go, like, pretty much to almost any one of them. They all had different looks, and, you know, so it's really hard to judge them, you know, especially right. when it started, there was, like, 40 in each class, and we were having to judge all these guys, you know, bikini, too.
Amon, when it got to that, when your eyes just started going like this and everything just starts looking the same, right? I mean, you're sitting there for hours. I mean, my hat goes off to you guys. I don't see how you do it. Like, I mean, what do you start judging when everything starts looking the same? Is it personality? Is it the presentation, how they move, the smile? Does it come down to that?
Well, Kevin, it got to a point where it was just like, you know, men's physique was, they didn't know what to do on stage. So they were blowing us kisses, that they were reeking at us. We did an MPC seminar and we had to tell them like, please do not wink or blow kisses. All the judges and Texas are straight. We don't want kisses or wink at us at all. So,
especially in Texas,
it was a tough pill to swallow, you know, once they came in, because as bodybuilders, we're, you know, we show off, but we're modest. We cover up, we wear big clothes. And then physique guys would come to the shows and be walking around the whole show with their shirt off the whole time. We're like, oh my gosh, this is like so cheesy. And then, you know, judging them,
the jury really, sure, you know,
yeah. So, Kevin, when we judged them, we would really just pick like the top five. And then the other one just scribbled just randomly. So, like, you know, 8 through whatever, 40 would just kind of, you would have to just scribble them in because you really didn't have enough time to actually judge, you know, pretty much after the 5th place. So, it, you know, someone got maybe, you know, 12th place instead of 8th, you know, you really didn't have time to judge them. So it made me understand at that bigger level, like nationals, when they had to judge like 40 guys at a time, and you know,
amazing how they do it.
You do get looked over. It's hard. I mean, you gotta, you know, come out there, whoever, like, you know, always be holding your pose, because if someone's not holding their pose in men's physique, you know, you're not gonna see them or whatever. But you're just like that. I mean, you have the worst migraine. I mean, you should have the worst migraine when I get through judging like the bikini or men's physique class.
So how much, one, my other question is, how much of personality has to do with it, as far as, you know, the presentation, the personality? Can you actually feel, you know, what those guys are doing? Is it,
I think there's a charisma component, Kevin, like that you can just, certain people kind of draw you to them, you know? Oh, by the way, Chris Cormier sends his New Year's regards. He can't make the show, but he would have joined us otherwise, but he's out with friends, so. Chris might be drinking a few Jack and Cokes for all I know.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you know what? Let's move on to the next. Since you mentioned bikini, Armin, I want to bring up bikini because Ashley Kaltwasser is a pretty amazing bikini competitor. She has won over 40 IFBB pro shows. That's a record for men or women. And Kevin, how many shows did you win? You had
23.
23, which is pretty incredible. I know Dexter has about 29 or 30 or something like that.
Yeah.
And Ashley has 40 plus wins, and she placed third at the Olympia. She's still placing top three at the Olympia. You know, crazy. So I think she has to be considered one of the extraordinary stories of 2023.
Yeah, definitely. I mean,
we have a question for you, Kev. There's a question someone posted. Kevin Lebroni, you bench 600 while training. What do you think you could have done if you were a full out power lifter?
I don't know. I bench pressed 600 raw because I always said to myself, I'm going to keep going until something happens. So for me, I don't know. 600, I guess, with no shirt.
Well, you did. You don't. You did 1.5 reps with 600. So, you know.
Yeah, I'm not the guy that's going to put on a shirt and all that stuff, man. You know, it's cheap. So,
600. Kevin would have done 1,000 pounds, probably. That's what I say. So, mm-hmm. Kevin was. You would have been gifted at anything you did. You had a good squat too, right? What were you squatting, like 700? Yeah. You know, for reps.
I did 780 for like
wow,
five one time.
That's insane.
Because I went to the gym.
With full range Gunny, of motion, too, you would do that.
Yeah. I was squatting all the way down. And Gunny, he was loading. Well, actually, I would never let nobody load my plates. But for some reason, I was doing something, and I went, walked away, and he said, come on, let's just do this. And I walked over, and I thought it was 6-something. And I got underneath of it, and I just started going, you know. I had my leg wraps on and my belt and stuff, and I had one guy on one side, and he was in the back. I banged out about 6 of them. I think it was about 6. And he said, you know how much that was, right? And I said, no. He told me how much it was. I was like, I got pissed off because I was like, damn, man, I could have hurt myself.
Right. That's funny.
Yeah,
a lot of it's mental. It's a mental game. A lot of lifting too. You know.
Yeah, it is, man. I remember one day I would warm up with 315, and then I go to 405, and it just felt light squatting. And I put 500 on. I didn't have shoes. I didn't have a belt. I didn't have anything. And I did it for 20 reps all the way down to the bottom. Holy and I mackerel. Was like, it was too light. I got pissed off. So.
Yeah. I had a lot of trouble going. Passing 600, because I think it was a mental thing in my head. It was like that 600 number was, and you know what? Someone did something similar to what they did to you. They stuck an extra plate on there, and I didn't realize it was on there. I thought I was doing 585 or something like that, and I was really doing like 615.
Yeah.
And I banged it out for like 6 reps, and he's like, you know, you just did 615 for. I said, I did. So it was totally a mental game.
Yeah, definitely.
What was your best deadlift, Kev?
What's that?
What was your best deadlift?
I was not really a deadlifter, Dave, to be honest with you.
You didn't
deadlift? Because I heard that, you know, it makes your waist wide and stuff.
Yeah, that's
probably for bodybuilders, you know what I mean? So yeah. I just kind of like stayed away from it.
Gotcha.
Mm-hmm. Kevin, do you think you could, you know, like all the fancy equipment today, like all the Panada we were talking about the other day, and
I won't even touch it.
Dave and us, do you think you could have built your physique
no.
with that's all those machines that they use today?
No.
Yeah, that's what Dave and I were talking about the other day, and Larry, like, I don't think
I you have to build your base. Videos. I can look at some of those videos and see those guys training on that equipment. And you can see actually why their body parts are like missing. There's certain body parts that don't have sweeps to them and everything. It's because those guys aren't doing, you know, free weight squats, full range of movements. There's something about like barbells and free weights and shit that, you know, you're getting full ranges of every single thing, you know, tendons and ligaments are firing that. Those machines are protecting you and guiding a lot of stuff, right. And it's balancing you, right?
So the balance,
man. You just don't know how much, you know, they could have so much more developed if they just stick with the basics, deadlift, squats, and bench, and then build up from there, you know?
Yeah,
but
I agree.
I mean, all of us back then, all of us used barbells, dumbbells, free weights, you know?
You didn't even think about the machines. And there were machines. Like,
and that's probably why they look different too, you know.
Yeah. There were machines, but people just used the machines as like accessory movements, like maybe like a third or fourth finishing movement was the machine, but you did the free weights first all the time.
I would only work out on machines when I would get like probably like 6 weeks out and I need to do like flies and high reps and stuff, you know, easy curls on the
They don't get that fibrous look like all through the chest and shoulder area. They're missing all that. Deep they're big
cuts and striations. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean,
that's what's missing.
If you remember back to when you first started lifting, I tell people this all the time. Remember that first time you tried to do a bench press, like in high school or something like that, whatever you tried, and the bar was like all over the place, and like you couldn't balance it, and it was like, whoa.
Exactly.
Because that balance is like a learned behavior. It's not just a muscle behavior. It's a nervous system. Like you're building nerve pathways to be able to balance this thing and move it. And when the nerves grow into the muscle, they innervate the muscle more and they activate the muscle better. So if you let the machine do that for you, you're not getting that extra.
You're not getting that mind-body connection.
Right.
You're not getting it, because there's something about when you have that weight and you got to balance that weight.
Yeah.
And you know, with that much weight, you can just tell when it's not balanced on your back well, even your feet, everything has to be equilibrium has to be firing, man.
Right. Did you ever squat, Kevin, and for some reason someone forgot to put a 5 pound on one side, so one side is 5 pounds heavier? You know when you go down.
You can
be squatting 600 pounds, you'll know there's a 5 pound missing on that fucking bed, on that bar. You know,
put it on machines and you can't really tell the difference.
You would never be able to tell. Larry, what do you think about that? Because you're a big training guy.
So I started with free weights in the beginning. And then when I went training with Mike Mentzer, he had me doing a lot of Nautilus equipment.
Yeah, he was into that.
But I felt like, you know, even though the training intensity was high, and I didn't feel like the muscle wasn't working completely the same way.
Yeah. How come he didn't do his heavy duty stuff on free weights? Why did he only do it on Nautilus stuff?
He was just stuck on Nautilus and Arthur Jones at the time. But we did a little bit of free weights, but it was mostly Nautilus. But I always felt like there was something missing, especially like a back workout.
Yeah.
Like right now, okay, my traditional back workout was pull-ups, heavy bent over rows, heavy deadlifts, heavy one-arm dumbbell rows. And now I got a little injury in my lower back, so I'm using, you know, pull down machines and the hammer strength row and flex row. And I mean, I train really hard on it, but I don't get that soreness in my back. No matter how hard I train on it, it's like normally when I did that free weight workout after a back workout, I felt like I get hit by a car. The whole back side just was like.
Mm-hmm.
And now I can I go all out failure, force reps, drop sets, the whole thing. But I don't get that soreness, not the same way.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You're just not working all the muscles.
Yep, I agree.
That's so true.
All right. Next story. I guess this would be story number 7. Sydney Gillen. Well, no, you know what? Let's go to Andrea Shaw first, because Andrea Shaw has won her 4th Miss Olympia bodybuilding title, and she won 4 Rising Phoenix titles. She's probably made, I think, the most money behind, except for like the Mr. Olympia champ, because the women's bodybuilders are getting paid a lot of money. Between, I know the Rising Phoenix show is like $50,000 or $75,000, and then the Olympia is like $50,000. So she's, you know, she's taking home over 6 figures, you know, every year, because she's winning both shows, and she's done it 4 years in a row now. I got to say that, you know, I think she's probably underappreciated in our sport, you know, for what she's accomplished. So let's give her a little pat on the back today and say, good job.
Absolutely.
I think she brings just the perfect balance of, she has the muscularity, but she didn't lose the femininity in her face.
No, she didn't.
She looks incredible, man.
I think there's a categorical imperative that there has to be a beauty component to the women's divisions. I mean, because at the end of the day, we don't want the women to look like the men. We want there to be a differentiation. There's a feminine angle to it. And I think that there's certain women in the division, and it seems like the Miss Olympias have figured it out over the years. I know Andrea has figured it out. Linda always figured out. Even Iris would always come in, you know, all dolled up when she was winning her titles. And, you know, you see it. I see some of the women in women's physique and women's bodybuilding with the crazy hairdos and the shaved, you know, heads, and, you know, sometimes it just looks a little too wacky. I don't know. What do you think, Kevin, about that? Are you kind of like a conservative person in that sense?
Very, very conservative. Yes. I think some of them can overdo it, you know, but, and like you said, Linda Murray and Iris and them, they still, and the champ here, I mean, she looks, there's a sex appeal to it that they're bringing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm looking at her. I mean, God, she looks phenomenal. But then, you know, there's a sexy side to it.
And I think it's important. I think it's the onus of the competitor to figure out what the look is and to go after it. I mean, you know what I mean? It's not just about muscle. It's and even in the men's divisions, I've seen guys lose shows because their tan was terrible. I mean, you've seen that, Kevin. I mean, how many coats of pro tan back in the day? Because there was no spray tanning. Kevin, how long would it take you to get you know, tanned up?
I would have to start 3 days out, bro.
Tell them, please. I want to hear it. Please say it.
Dude, 3 days out. Yeah. 3 days out. You got to start. I would put on like 9 coats, you know?
And Kevin's put it on. He still did it. Yeah.
You put it on. You let it set. You sleep with it. You let it dry. You got to get up, shower the next day, put another 2 or 3 coats on, cover up. Like, I would start painting myself Wednesday. So was Saturday. First coat would go on Wednesday. You know, 2 on Thursday, 4 on Thursday, some on Friday, wake up Saturday, shout for prejudging, maybe put a little one more on. It was pro-tan, dude. That stuff would be all over the place.
Yeah. And you had to stand up and let it dry, too. You couldn't lay down after you put it on.
Yeah, 3 days before, 4 days before.
These guys have it made today with the spray tanning, you know. It takes 10 minutes, you know.
What's hurting them? All these shows now, they have the tanners and they barely spray them anymore. And you got to tell,
I have my clients go and yell at them and say, "Look, I want an extra coat. I'm paying you $150. I want more coats. This is not dark enough. Sorry,
Dave. I would
you
go.
You really have to get into it with them.
I would go through like 8 or 9, close to 10 bottles of protein.
Oh, would you really? Yeah, me too. Yeah, not that many, but yeah.
Yeah,
because you always had very good color on stage. I never saw you with bad color ever. Never.
Well, then back then we used to get in a tan in bed too. Remember?
You have to. Yeah, you should have a base tan. I see guys that are so pasty white, and they think the spray tan is going to cover it all. It's like painting a wall, you know, black that has like a white. Yeah. You can't do it. You got to have a base coat under it first before you put the color on, the final color on.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Anyway, all right, let's go to Sydney Gillen, who deserves mention. She is now a 7-time figure Olympia champ here in 2023. Wow. I mean, she's just one of the most – I think she might be the most dominant figure Olympia champ of all time. Now, I remember when she won her first Olympia. I think she was like 19 or 20 or something like that. I said, this girl's going to win 10 Olympians. Yeah. Unbelievable. And she's not too extreme. You know, I think figure got a little too big for a while. Not her. But I think figure in general, some of the girls were starting to look like women bodybuilders. And I think she's like a perfect balance of what they really want, you know.
She just V-frame.
Yeah. What'd you say, Dharma?
Some of their conditioning was just way too overboard for figure. Yeah. Like the legs and, I mean, the cross striation and veins. I'm like, that's not what figure's about. They've gone too far again. They, you know, it's just like – the women's physique, those girls are so big now. It's just
speaking of beautiful women's physique competitors, we got Natalia Coelho in the chat. Congratulations. She won the Olympia last year. She came in second this year. She lost it. I'm sure she's gonna come back and win it again.
She should have won.
One of the most beautiful women. She knows how to doll herself up and do all the right stuff on stage. So she'll be she turned pro in figure, I remember, when she was 19 years old, I believe it was. And she had cross striated quads. I said, "You got to go into women's physique." And so did everyone else, told the same thing. So,
yeah, she's great physique.
I noticed this year she toned it down a little bit with the conditioning.
Who did?
Natalia.
Yeah, a little bit. Maybe.
Yeah, she was lean, but she didn't display the striated quads, or at least she wasn't flexing them to try to show it.
Yeah,
she looked the same to me.
I thought she looked the same. I thought that Sarah came back who won, Sarah Villegas. I think she just came back a little better than she was the year before that. And you know, it was close. It was a coin toss. And I think that maybe for bigger structure. But, you know, they're so close to doing that. They're going to be battling for the next, you know, 3-4 years for sure.
Mm.
And I think – I don't know what the age is on them. I think Natalia's younger, so she's going to be around. She'll probably be around 10 more years, you know, the way she's going. She looks amazing, so – love her physique. All right,
does it seem like these girls do have a longer career than the guys?
Yeah, because they don't abuse themselves as much. You know that.
I mean, Ashley's been out there how many years now?
She's been quite a while. Well, she turned. I think she won the first Olympia when she was 19. She was really Kevin, right.
The guys are taking 30 IUs of GH today now.
What?
Yeah, they're taking 30 IUs of GH.
This is a lot. People are pushing the. Kev, you took 4 IUs back in the day.
Well, GH, Dave, you know how much I took. Because
I know.
You
I told
it
you
what to do. New York, you gave it.
He showed me the microscope. It's the refrigerator. Listen, but they were real, you know. They were
let's
real.
Do this. Let's just do this because a lot of people always say they're bullshitting whatever it was. Dave, you know what I was taking.
I know exactly. Yep. He was on 1,000 milligrams of testosterone. He was on 4 IUs of Humatrope taken per day, and he was taking. I think I brought you some Primobol in tablets. You were taking the like 50 or 75 milligrams of Primo acetate tablets, and you were on 3 Parabol in a week. That was it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if Kevin remembers it, but when he was coming back, what was it, 2015, 14? What was?
No. Oh, that comeback. Yeah.
Yeah.
We spoke, we text back and forth, Kevin, because Dave, you gave him a number, and I'm like, talking about GH, and yeah, you're like, Kevin's like, all I need is like 4 IUs a day. I'm like, Kevin, they're doing like 15 minimal. He goes, I don't care. All I need is 4.
Yeah, he doesn't need it.
I was like, that's crazy. I was like, wow.
You know what? That I think the drugs were better back in the 90s because I think there's a lot of fake stuff out there now. And I think that's why guys take more, to be honest with you. But
Tyler, some people are just straight up nuts. I just did a video recently. I said 3 to 4 units a day is most you can use because then your body produces somatostatin to offset.
You know what?
Yeah,
you're 100% right about that.
Then you have this Chase Iron guy talking about he's taking 23 units a day.
That guy Larry, that guy's crazy, bro. Like,
you know what? And I know Kevin. I know this irks you too. I love when you get these younger guys that you know think they know more than like everyone else that preceded them, and they say, oh, those guys don't know what they're talking about from the 90s. They're just old guys. They don't know. This is the new way to do it. Well, guess what? The guys in the 90s look pretty fucking good. So obviously they must have known. That's why I get a laugh because it's like we figured out how to use the drugs already. There's no new drugs on the market that anyone's using.
No.
So it's all the same steroids and GH. No. So we figured it out, and look, you can look at the physiques to prove that. Ronnie and Dorian and Kevin and Flex. Everyone knows the right dosages. The only reason I can potentially think of people using more drugs today would be because maybe they're fake or underdosed, or maybe they're just delusional. But there's no reason to use more than what we talk about, the 1,000 milligrams of testosterone.
Well,
or I use a GH.
They rely now on the machines and the not training hard. They don't want to suffer.
Right. And we're not talking about the elite. We're not talking about the Olympia guys. We're talking about the guys that are, the bro guys on Instagram is what you're talking about.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. The ones that think they're doctors and they think they know everything, super trainers and all of this. And then they go after guys like us. Oh, those guys are lying. Those guys are bullshit. Those guys are this. And half of them guys never even stepped on stage or even have the balls to step on stage.
Which takes us to our next story, which is maybe I didn't want to put it at the end because I didn't want to leave with the depressing note, but that we've lost a lot of people in 2023, a lot of top-level bodybuilders. I want to kind of just mention some names. I mean, and this is not all of them, but I think I hit the main ones. Lee Banks passed in 23. Tanya Knight, who you knew, Kev, back in your day. Yeah. Mike Quinn, who you competed with, died. Gustavo Bedell, who competed, for many years as a top guy, third Olympia behind, Jay and Ronnie. Lisa Lyon, who was a pioneer in women's bodybuilding, died this past year. That Joe Lindner guy, Joe Aesthetics, who was a big Instagram guy, died. Superstar Billy Graham died. Dawn Whittem, who was a women's bodybuilder. Amho Height, who Chris Cormier was married to for a while and has a child with. Well, I'm actually friends with the son. Manuel Lomeli, he also died from Mexico. Was he Mexican or was he was he Venezuelan, I think, Manuel? Larry, do you remember what nationality is? Manuel?
I think he was Mexican.
Yeah, he was Mexican, yeah.
Yeah.
So, we lost a lot of big name guys. And you know what? We lost three people this past – actually, four people this past weekend, which is really, really depressing. Because every time I got another text from Dave Lieberman, because Dave Lieberman and I always text each other with the gossip. I'm like, Dave, please don't tell me another person passed. He's like, and then I texted him with someone that I found out. Joe Ladnier, he died. He was a big powerlifter guy and competed at the Masters Nationals in bodybuilding. He died. Eric Bergeron, who I met at a guest posing, he was from Vermont. His brother contacted him. He was a 300-pound guy back in the day. He passed. Mm. And then who's the guy in California who just died too?
Powerlifter?
No, there was another guy someone just sent me that passed also from California. Let me look up his name. I want to give his family credit, you know, and tell him, you know, send out our condolences.
And these people are not past 50 years old, are they?
They are past. Most of them were fit in the 50s, yeah. Joe Ladnier.
That shouldn't be happening.
Raul Faulkner, Mr. California. He passed. And, you know, I got a call today. I got a text, I'm not going to say from a friend of mine who said that, did you hear Jason Arntz passed? And I'm really good friends with Jason. I said, no freaking way. So I texted Jason, and he actually got back to me. And I was like, oh, thank God. I said, Jason, I couldn't take another day. You know, he was very close with him back in the day. And it turned, and then I get another text right after that. And it's a guy I kind of will text with every once in a while. He's like, Dave, you know that, you know, I don't know if you know Jason, I mean, Alar, who you've been, you know, he's a client of mine. I just signed up. I've been working with him for 3 weeks. He died. Mm. So it wasn't Jason Arntz. Someone mixed up the name. And it just so happened that it was someone that I had just started working with. I think he had a heart attack or something like that in his sleep or something like that. So terrible. I mean, I don't know what's going on with this holiday season. I don't know why so many people die around the holidays. I don't know if it's depression.
It's Thanksgiving in December, man.
Yeah, it's terrible. It's
depression, you know, I think that has a lot to do with your happiness in life for you to keep going. I think that's a big, your will.
And, you know, a lot of these deaths, some of them were suicide. Some of them, like Tanya, had cancer. I mean, they're not all like from the same thing. You know, they're not all heart attack. You know, so it's, you know, people die. It's just, it seemed like we had
people die.
You know.
So the past 3 years, Dave, like the past 3 years have been really bad. Just horrific.
25% to 30% uptick in overall deaths around the world.
Is that what it is?
25 to 30% uptick in overall deaths.
Why are you standing in the dark over there?
Because I have to be outside. It's the only place I can. I'm out of
a flashlight on your face or something.
What's that?
You need to get a ring light, George. Get a ring light.
There's a light above. I'm outside of the pool, by the pool.
You're fine.
Cold out here. 62.
I know it's cold. It's 50. It's in the 50s by me, which is crazy. Yeah.
Is it 50s by you?
Yeah. It was a little chilly today.
So I got a question for Kevin. Yeah. Kevin, what kind of training are you doing now? Are you doing more like athletic training?
Just agility training, like speed and conditioning stuff. You know, my son, he plays football. So when he goes in, you know, for his football training stuff, I'll normally, you know, do some stuff like that.
How old is he?
Man, jumps.
How old is he, Kevin, now?
He's 17.
Oh, wow. So how is he athletically inclined?
Oh, you mean far as his athletic
ability? Yeah, is he good?
Yeah. He's fast. He's a good athlete. Yeah.
Well, he's your genetics. That's why I want. Has he tried to like train to see if he can get bigger yet?
No, because he just wants that football stuff, right? Those guys think different.
Right.
They're not like crazy hardcore like we were. We were like insane.
Right. But do you ever like wonder, I wonder if my son actually trained like a bodybuilder, if he'd have my genetics.
Oh, he does. He does have my genetics.
Oh, he does?
Yeah. I look at his belly muscle tie-ins and everything.
Right.
I'll send you a picture later. Okay. The guy's back. His back is better than my back.
Really?
Yeah.
So you think he doesn't have
that though.
Oh, he doesn't?
That crazy switch.
Thank God he doesn't have that.
He doesn't have that. Well, he has it for football, though, doesn't he? Or he doesn't have it for football?
He's got it for football, but he's fast. The football players don't really need to have it like that. I think the Ray Lewis days are gone for those guys as well. You know,
yeah, you're not even allowed to hit people that hard anymore.
Yes, they've softened the game up now, man. Okay, you're right. It's not like it used to be.
100%. Bodybuilding's a dark place. You go to a dark place in bodybuilding. You know, it's just
it's dark. Did. I know. I certainly did. I mean, it was the moments, man. Yeah, you're. You know, the choices that I had to make was like, I know it was like, and I always, I tell people when they ask me, well, I want to be like, you know, I want to do this. And I'm like, you don't understand, man. It's like, my father died when I was 10. My mother died when I was 19.
It's crazy, yeah.
I was pissed off. We're at my dad's funeral. My aunt died at his funeral.
Oh my God,
my father
really?
Died December the 18th. And then... he buried on Christmas Eve, so we're sitting there, and then we get the phone call that same whatever my aunt died on Christmas
Eve. That's crazy.
And we were burying my father on my brother's birthday, so it was like,
wow,
part of that insanity, right? And then you rip your chest, and then you know you don't have any, you know what I mean? My both of them died from cancer, so I started working out and training after that because I wanted to go to the gym and be healthy, and then. Talk about death. So it was my dad and his sister 4 days apart. Then the month later, my grandfather died.
Oh my God.
And my mother's sister died. And we buried my cousin Larry, he ended up getting shot and getting killed. We buried like six people in a matter of 4 months.
Oh my God. That's depressing. Wow.
It's crazy. I remember growing up, I was always at funerals. Man,
I know this happened to me. My mom died of cancer too when I was 14, and I always had this. I didn't worry about it, but I lived my life like I'm not gonna have like regrets because I was afraid that I would get cancer if I did things that I didn't really enjoy doing, and like I thought it was like a psychological thing. Like if I didn't do what I really enjoyed and had passion for, I was afraid I was gonna get cancer and die. Mm-hmm. Did you ever have that feeling inside?
No, I always have the feeling I can't do what I want to do. I got to watch what I eat.
You went for bodybuilding. That's not a safe bet. That's you kind of.
It took for my mother to die for me to make the decision to start getting on some juice because I said, you know what? I don't have anything else to live for right now. And I'm going to put my life on the line to go after this passion that I wanted, and I at that moment I knew that I was taking my life in my own hands.
Right.
You know, the most scariest thing is to take something like a steroid and put it in your body, and you don't know what's going to happen because you've heard all these horror stories, right?
Sure.
And you just don't know. And I know how I felt when I first did that. I was like, "Damn, what's going to happen?" You know. And but you just. I don't know, man. Something just clicked to where I just didn't care about anything anymore after my mother died. And I just went to the gym and trained and bust my ass. And next thing I knew, everything just started happening. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so, that sometimes you need that pain, Kevin, to get to that next level. Sometimes people don't have the pain. They don't have it.
See, people don't realize they want the success, but they don't want the suffering that comes along with it. You know, they don't want the suffering that comes along with it. If God had to say, "Hey, listen, you know what? You're going to be a great bodybuilder, but your father's going to die, your mother's going to die, your brother's going to get shot and murdered, and all this stuff is going to happen. You're going to rip your chest. You know, you're going to go through all of these challenges."
Right.
I probably would have said, "You know what? I don't want to do it."
Yeah, of course you wouldn't.
You know, going through that, and then whenever something happens, you don't know. You don't know the outcome, you know, you don't know the outcome when you go in the gym, you start training from, you know, I was 158 pounds when I first started working out when I was, you know, teenager and I graduated out of high school, I was about 158, you know,
wow.
And you just don't know, you're on this journey, but over years and years and years and time and time and time and valleys and people saying you're too small, you can't do it, and the negativity and this and that happening, you have nobody to talk to, but something just happens and clicks inside of your head when you start seeing yourself get a little progression, see a little belief, you see a little bit of this, then you go out and you win your amateur show. Okay, that's a little bit of hope. And you stay on that path and you just keep grinding and digging deeper and deeper and deeper. Next thing you know, man, you're in just, you're just in a zone, right? You're locked.
Yeah.
I miss 7 years of my family's family reunions.
Oh, I'm sure. When you're bodybuilding, you're so selfish, right? I mean, you won't cheat. You won't go to the parties.
I wouldn't even go to the reunions. I didn't want to be around. Well, mostly for me, it was because it reminded me of my parents when I saw my brothers and sisters.
Well, I can't even imagine how you got through holidays, Kevin, because I know I get depressed. And my mother didn't even die on a holiday, but that's when you remember them. And your whole family died on the holiday. I mean, that had
everybody in my family died from cancer, man.
Yeah.
Kevin, and that's kind of like Job, from the Bible. Like, did you have your faith back then? What got you through all that?
I did. What got me through it, because I remember the look on my mother's face when I was sitting at my father's funeral when I was 10 years old. He died within 2 weeks and got buried on Christmas. We didn't have a Christmas tree that year. And I remember looking up at her and I said, Mama, I said, if you said God is so good, then why did you take Daddy? And I remember her looking down at me and I said, why, if God is so good, then why did Daddy die? You know?
Yeah.
And I wanted to know those answers. And she says, Kevin, she says, God always knows what he's doing. Never question God. He always knows what he knows what he's doing. And I looked up at her and she never cried. And I didn't never see her cry over my father's death. And I saw that strength in her, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that kind of like stopped me from complaining about whatever situation I was in, to just endure the pain and just cope with it and deal with it, because I never saw her cry. And she had, it was seven of us she had to raise, and she never got remarried or nothing. And I was 10 and we were all 2 years apart.
Wow.
And I just saw that strength in her, man. And I think that just lit it. I said, damn, she could, I remember that. And I just endure all pain, whatever I have to deal with, I'll endure it without complaining. And I think that it just gave me a different insight about training and going to the gym and about life and about taking on obstacles and opportunity,
Yeah. I don't think, after hearing that you tell this, I don't think you would have been the bodybuilder you were without.
No, that had to happen. It had to happen in that sequence. So now when your question was close to God, I've always questioned God, well, why this? But I've never gotten my answers the time when I would ask those questions. I would never get that answer that day, that year, no, nothing. All I know is I got the answers now, because if I didn't go through that, the world will never even know my name right now, because I would have never got into bodybuilding and I would have never had that mindset to continue and to go through all those vigorous obstacles and be here today. Right. So that had to happen for me to have this, who I am.
And that my mindset is Kevin, and that don't discredit yourself. That mindset also made you a crazy, super successful supplement company owner.
Yeah.
People don't know the work ethic. I mean, this guy travels every weekend throughout Europe. I mean, he doesn't stop, and his company is very, very, very successful out there.
Yeah, Dave, I hit 23 different countries this year, and I went on tour with my company starting in spring. I miss all of my son's football games for the whole season except one, which is the Turkey Bowl, and I'm living in a hotel by myself on the road, missing all of my son's games and everything like this. And you figure, man, what am I doing? See, people, like I always say, they think, oh yeah, well, I can do what you can do what somebody else do. No, you can't. There's a whole lot going on deep down inside that's driving somebody to do that, right? And for me, it's okay. I enjoy it, and you got to go through those things. I had to go through that place to get to this place.
Right.
And it's okay, man. It's okay.
Someone has a question for you, Kevin. When you travel to the East, such as Dubai or Saudi, how is the crowd for your celebrity status? I know you're getting a big reception, right?
Yeah, yeah, it's incredible all over the world, man. Also here in America, you know, everybody's been tremendously supportive and respectful. And I love my fans. You know, my mother always said one thing. She says, "Do more for other people than you do for yourself." That's one of the things she told me before she died, and I never forget that. And she said, "God will take care of the rest." So I do it for them, man. You know, I show up, I stand there 8-9 hours, you know, jet lagged and tired. Everybody gets samples. Everybody gets products, T-shirts, gift bags, gym bags. And some of the stories I hear, you know, from the kids, you know, some kids have fighting for cancer, you know, 17 years old. Some kids just say, "Hey, you know, I'm at the end of my rope. And I wanted," this boy told me, he was 15 years old. He said, "I wanted to meet you before I decided to kill myself." And I said, "What are you talking about?" And he had stood there in line for like 4 or 5 hours. And he was just kept staring at me. And you know, I'm thinking, man, what does this kid want? And so at the end of the day, I said, "Man, what's going on?" He said, I came to talk to you. I said, "How old are you? Where are your parents at?" He goes, "I'm 15 years old." I said, "Where you live?" He says, "He got on a train. It took him about 4 hours to come to see me."
Wow.
He said, I want to talk to you." I said, "What?" He says, I need you to tell me my purpose for living before I decide, because I want to kill myself." I'm like, "What's going on, man?" He said he was molested since 7 years old from his older brother. You know, so you hear stories like that and it stops you in your tracks. And it hits home. You know, I embrace him. I hug him. I said, "Look, bro," I said, "no matter what you're going through, man, it's the season, you know, and you're going to get through on the other side. I know you're in a dark place." I said, I can feel your pain. And I gave him my number, and I still communicate with him to this day. You know what I mean? And
wow. It's awesome.
And it's kind of give him that strength to move out of the situation, to move out of the house, because he said his dad was an alcoholic. He didn't believe him. But his brother was doing that ever since he's 7 years old, and he's 15. Wow. And I can't imagine what it takes for him to wake up and pick his head up every single day and go on, you know, to try to be a man, you know, going through puberty and stuff. So I do it. They give me the strength to do it, you know. And as long as I can continue to touch and impact other people going through something, you know what I mean, then I'll continue to do it, man.
That's great. That's a great story, Kev. I never heard that story from you. So that's you saved the kid's life, basically, is what you did.
We all do, Dave. And then, you know, there's kids that look up to you, and people who need hope, you know, you pour into them. Just, you don't even know it. You don't even know who you out there inspiring. Like, I would never have known, because sometimes I always think, man, what am I doing? Why did I do this? Why do I? But our life has a purpose. You know, we sometimes we're living in it, but there are other people outside of it looking at our lives, and it makes sense to them. But a lot of things we do don't make sense to ourselves, but it makes sense to other people, and it helps other people. You know, even your everything that you've came through, you know, your operation with, you know, everything and, you know, continuously going and going. People see that relentless.
Yeah.
Relentless,
Kevin, you took the words out of my mouth. I have to say, that's, you know, sometimes you have to start analyzing and say, why did I go through what I went through? And I'm like, you know, in the last couple, I did 2 shoulder replacements, you know, I did a thyroid removal because I had thyroid cancer. I had an ankle fusion done, 2 ankle surgeries. One was an ankle fusion, and I had open heart surgery to fix an aorta. So, and I say to myself, why would God, you know, put me through this? But you know what? I came out healthy. I mean, everything was fixed. So I think it's just, it's a constant testament to show that, you know what, you can still overcome obstacles and have a positive outlook on what you're doing and come out of it with a smile on your face, because everyone has shit happen to them in life. It's no one smooth sails through life. It just doesn't happen. And it's how you deal with the adversity that you're presented with. I mean, as a child, you lost both parents. I mean, that's the worst thing that could possibly happen to a kid, you know. And you beat it, man. You got over it, you know. You came out superior to that. You didn't allow it to make you a drug addict and make you a statistic. So that's admirable.
And you know, we all get together as men, like we're on here now, right? We share our stories and stuff. And- you know, and don't be ashamed and don't be, you know, ashamed or feel bad about whatever you went through in life, because you had to go through those things and make us who we are here today. Right. So,
Armand told the story about, you know, how he was addicted to drugs and, you know, and he's told that story multiple times, and you know what? He beat it. He got past it. And so, I mean, everyone has their obstacles in life, and you got to find a way.
And Armand, look how many kids and people's lives that you've strengthened and helped out, because they looking at you saying, wow, he came out of it. You know, he made it. He made it through those struggles. And that gives them strength, man.
Larry was arrested, was kidnapped by the cartel in Mexico and was going to be killed and assassinated. He escaped and just from sheer, you know, willpower, and he got out of there and saved his own life, you know, essentially. I mean, think about that. That might be the craziest story.
Yeah. When Kevin was talking, I was thinking, you know, right when I got into bodybuilding, my older brother was murdered.
That's right. Yeah, I forgot about
13
that.
Years old. And that really did something in my head. And that's what got me really focused in bodybuilding. And I think I used the bodybuilding to, I don't know, get through that or bury it.
Yeah, well, we all use bodybuilding to muscle up our soul a little bit, to strengthen that, you know, and make us a little bit more invulnerable to emotional pain. But sometimes, you know, eventually you got to deal with it, you know. It's just
But you have to go through adversity, because that's what makes you who you are, like Kevin said.
Yeah, I think so. But all right, let's get back to the best of. We have five more to do, so let's bang these out. Rubio, Neckzilla, Mosquera. Yeah. One of the biggest freaks, Kevin. You saw him in person, so I want to hear your firsthand impression of Rubio, because this guy is he wins his pro card at the Prague on Friday. Saturday, he's on stage with the big boys in the pro division. He comes in third in that show, and he you know, places behind Samson, who was third at the Olympia, and Michael Crizzo. And now, you know, we're going to see him at the Arnold Classic. This guy has got to be considered. I would say he's the rookie of the year, wouldn't you?
Absolutely. He wins that rookie of the year award. Absolutely. These photos do not do justice with this human being right here. It is a it, because when I saw him, I was like, what is that? What is it? And the only person I ever said that about was Ronnie Coleman, when he took that enormous jump and just showed up. He was walking out in front of me, coming out of our dressing rooms. And oh my God, I was behind him. He was like wide as a refrigerator. He was like a silverback gorilla, because he was so black and dark. I was like, what is that? It was unhuman, man.
For Kevin to say that, because Kevin was a real freak of his own right. Yeah, for Kevin to feel that way, it puts it into perspective how crazy Ronnie was. You know,
like, what is that?
Yeah,
it didn't look normal. It wasn't human. No way. This guy reminds me of that look, and he has that freaky lower body. I've never seen any leg. Ronnie's legs was not that big. This guy has phenomenal lower body. I think he's got to get his hamstrings up a little more, though.
Yeah.
And of course, bring body parts up top to try to somewhat balance them out. Definitely a freak. Definitely crazy genetics. And I think this guy's going to be another, you know, Victor Richards, right, Dave?
Yeah, he's Victor definitely Richards, reminds me of Victor.
He's one of the biggest bodybuilders I've ever seen in my life. Victor Richards' quads, one of them was 34 inches, I believe.
Yeah, that's crazy.
And he's a cross between Victor Richards and Ronnie Coleman, as far as freak wise.
And that's a compliment coming from Kevin Lebroni.
I mean, this guy can make an enormous amount of money and a living off this sport, even if he doesn't win the Mr. Olympia. If he just market himself right, from the way he looks,
right,
he can make a lot of money.
There you go. That's coming from Kevin Lebroni. Armand, how do you think he's going to do up on the Arnold stage?
Man, he's a freak. You know, What do you think about the whole neck? I don't like his nickname, Neckzilla, since us bodybuilders, we really don't want big necks for bodybuilding. It's like,
yeah, but it matches his body. That's the whole thing. You know, it's like,
yeah,
to the rest of them.
That is true. Yeah, I mean, he's 28. So, I mean, gosh, it's like, I'm thinking when I was 20, I'm like, man, this guy's a monster. I just another few years and then, you know, getting that conditioning, bringing up his, you know, his back and his hamstrings. I mean, I think it's a Mr. Olympia in the making. If he does everything right and keeps his head there and is able to, you know, go in that to that place to get that crazy conditioning and all that. I mean,
you know, Amon, that's my question. That's the whole it thing. Will he be able to do that? Because me observing his personality and being around him, that's the thing that he needs that right now. I don't think he has that.
Yeah.
Because we've got a lot of guys, you know, that had that look. You're like, wow. And then they just never, okay, the next you're going to, and they just never come in that condition and they just kind of fade out. And it's like, man, that was a disappointment. And they got to suffer.
You know, I mean, yeah. You got like, you know, how much is he willing to suffer in the gym? Dave, yeah. You know how it is the way you were trained, right?
Yeah. Well, I think
you
know, also
you'd be like,
is he willing to do the diet? Is he willing to get that little extra graininess, you know, that separation, which is, it's that death zone you got to go into, like that zone where, you know.
Yeah, Kevin, you got to get on the edge.
Kevin would eat vegetables and fish for weeks on end. He didn't care. He didn't eat any carbs.
No. I would go 2.5-3 weeks with no carbs, man.
Yeah. And you wouldn't lose an ounce of muscle either. That's the funny thing. So.
I don't think he's the next Trey Brewer.
You know, but yeah, he's got to get that psycho thing, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And then I mean, we got what is he got? Chris Kramer.
Yeah, he's got Chris doing his training. You know, so I think he's going to be a superstar. I think we're going to see a top, certainly a top five placing at the Arnold.
Oh, definitely top five all day, maybe top three or four if he can get the
yeah.
You know, it's balance, right? But the balance is going to be his greatest challenge. And I, you know, it's going to be his greatest challenge. I think he hasn't been working out that long either.
No, I don't think he has either. So he's got, you know, that image, you know, he almost is like a big Rammy like type of guy, you know.
Yeah, I think this guy's been training what, 4 years?
Not that much. Yeah, I think he's a hyper responder like you are. He's got the, you know, he grows very easily. So I think it's going to be a matter of if he can bring that grainy conditioning. I think that's going to really be the.
Because I saw that picture because I did a little video on that picture. It's like he's tiny when he's like 20, and then he's like 28. He's this monster.
But he still had a nice physique when he was small.
Yeah.
He still had arms and delts and stuff like that. He wasn't right. Like he wasn't like Flex Wheeler looked like Michael Jackson when he was
yeah. Young.
And that was an amazing.
He had the cap shoulders and all that. Yeah.
He needs to be in the right environment with his trainer.
Right.
And I think right now, where does he live?
I think he's in the Netherlands now, from what Cormier told me.
Oh, really?
That's where Chris was going to train him in the Netherlands. I think the sponsor lives there or something like that. So I don't know. I think originally, isn't he from like South America originally?
I think so.
I think he's been living in the Netherlands because that's where his sponsor is. So we'll see. All right, let's go to our next story, which is really a phenomenon. Chris Bumstead, who wins his fifth Classic Physique Olympia championship, and the guy, which is maybe more impressive, has got and I know people are going to break my balls. He's got 22 plus million followers on Instagram. He's got to be the most popular guy in the history of our sport, you know?
Yes.
And the phenomenon almost can't be explained. There's no rational explanation for it. The guy is just the it guy in our sport. What do you think is it that attracts people to this guy? Not people in the industry, outside the industry.
Well, I mean, number one, everybody wants to look like him. he has a very like you know, his physique, right? I don't know what it is.
He's got
a
lot of muscle, though. It's not like he's got a small amount of muscle. Why do people all of a sudden like his physique and they didn't like your, you know, they weren't following, you know?
This is a different time. You know, he came along at the right time with social media. He has a very marketable look about him. His body's damn near perfect. Look at him.
Yeah.
right there. You know, he really looks incredible. Yeah. The 22 million and all those millions, and I don't know where those people come from.
That's why, like, I questioned it the other day. I said, it just seems, like, a little peculiar.
But he can put a picture of him, like, washing a car and get, like, what, 10 million hits or something on it?
It's incredible. It really is. It is a phenomenon. That's exactly what it is. It's a phenomenon. This picture was liked by 1,519,000 people.
Wow. It's crazy. It's crazy.
Incredible. Yeah. Incredible.
Beautiful girl.
Yeah. Yeah. Nice, you know, a really nice guy too. So, you know, you can't even, you only wish good things on him because he is a good guy. You know, he's not like an arrogant guy. He's not cocky. No. He's very down to earth. And I think
very down to earth.
Yeah.
Well, that's probably why too, Dave, that he's just a regular guy, not arrogant.
No. Right. But, you know, I don't know. Some people just, you ever see these videos that go viral on YouTube and they get like billions of hits? And you're like, why would that video of all the videos get all these hits? And there's no explanation for it. It just was in the right place at the right time, and it clicked and caught on. And that's just the way it works.
Think if Classic Physique never came along and he was just bodybuilding. He wouldn't have been that bodybuilder where, you know, that class was made for him.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Steve Bum versus Laverne. I want Laverne's body.
Yeah, this guy wants your body. He'll, for $2 Canadian, he'll take your physique. Oh, Kevin, let me ask Larry. Larry, Kevin Lavroni, Chris Bumstead on stage. Who wins? Kevin at his peak.
Well, I'm a bodybuilding fan, so I'm going to go with Kevin.
Armand,
Bumstead is unbelievable.
Yeah,
I mean, his structure, just when he's standing next to everybody else, he's so wide, and he's bigger than everybody, not just conditioned, but he's bigger than the other guys up there.
Right.
His frame takes up more space on stage.
He's structurally better than everyone. That's mm-hmm. really what it is. Mm-hmm. That's what Classic Physique is about. It's a structure. It's a structure.
Yeah, it is.
You have to have that small waist with the wide shoulders, and, you know, and the tall guys, I really believe, I don't know if you, Kevin, if you agree with me, but I think the tall guys have a big advantage over the shorter guys.
Yeah, they do. Yeah.
Because it's the Arnold division. I mean, the big guy wins in structure. You know, it's just you can't put more than a certain amount of muscle because you won't make the weight class. So it's like these little guys just get lost, and you know they can only weigh 170 pounds. How are you going to beat a guy 6'2"?
Well, right. other than Lee is the only short.
But Lee didn't have a weight restriction on him. If Lee was a classic guy, he wouldn't be able to weigh more than 170 pounds. You know.
Yeah.
He wouldn't be that dominant at 170 pounds, you know. So it's the big guys can hold more weight on their frame. I think Bumstead could weigh 148 or something like that. I mean, that's a lot of weight, you know, to compete against a guy 170. How does a guy like that? It's impossible, you know.
Bumstead has to weigh how much?
I think he could weigh about 148 or somewhere in that. 248.
That's big, man.
He's
six two. I mean, it's the way it goes.
I know you're 6'1". He doesn't look 6'2", Dave.
No, but it's close, whatever. He might be 6'1". But what I'm saying is if you're over 6 feet, it really expands how much weight you can hold on that body, you know. And he's got small joints, so it's like his bones look like they weigh nothing, you know. It's like the Flex Wheeler phenomenon. You know, Flex looked like he had no joints when he was on that stage. All right. Let's go to the next story. The second most, I think, the most significant story of 2023, and that's Samson Dauda. Wins the Arnold Classic, finishes third at the Olympia. A lot of people felt he could have been higher at the Olympia. Some people thought he might have been the guy who won. I mean, this guy has had an outstanding 2023, maybe the best of the year, you know, aside from Derek Lunsford, who won the Olympia. Let's take a look at him. Kevin, tell us what you think about Samson Dauda. What do you like about him? What do you think?
Well, you know, I met him. I met him for the first time this year. Great personality, real, real nice guy. Impressed me. That was the first thing that impressed me, you know, because he was so nice. I was at Prague. I was backstage at Prague. Did a little bit of emceeing at the Prague pro show when he won.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a first look at, you know what, this guy is, he's a class act. His physique well balanced. You know, he's balanced, man.
Yeah.
And he looked good, you know, and I don't know. I mean, I don't know what he has to do to get any better or what he can do to get better. I had him actually, I mean, with his structure and everything, I had him higher at the Olympia, man.
Yeah. I mean, is he capable of getting that grainy look that you had on stage and some of these other guys? You know, some people think, well, not everyone can get that look. I'm of the belief that anyone can get that grainy look, you know, if you diet hard enough. What's your thought on that?
My thought on it, if he hooks up with Dave Palumbo, you know that guy named Dave Palumbo? I know Dave could probably dial him in and get him right, definitely. Dave can do anything with these right. these guys.
Well, I mean, if you would get, let's take me
no,
out.
I'm serious, man.
Thank you.
Aceto and, you know, guys like that. And, like, we don't know how much he's suffering.
Does so he need to do the fish and vegetable diet? I mean, yeah.
You see, you could put him on the whole fish and vegetables for about 3 months and really put that cardio on him in the morning. Fasted cardio and see what's going on.
How much cardio did you do, Kevin, back in the day?
I would do 45 minutes in the morning on an empty stomach.
Yeah.
You know, and I think he's probably eating steak and all that stuff.
Yeah.
So you can do a lot to thin his skin down and everything to get him ripped.
Do you think it's a good idea that he's hitting all these shows back to back, or do you think he needs to take a break? Or you think
it's a good idea for him right now because he's getting all that. He's getting all of, man, bodybuilding is a business, and a lot of guys think, you know, I don't want to do this and this. But right now, what he's doing is smart. He can come back and not do so much this year, you know. But he got to make that money while he's hot.
He was smart. He went to the tour like he used to do, and he cleaned up. He won almost all the shows that after the post Olympia tour there, and he pocketed some good cash for himself. Why not?
He did. Right? You know, it's a business. Yeah. These guys, some guys get, you know, they get butt hurt because they don't place or they don't win where they want, but they got to realize it's a business, and you know, it's got to keep going.
You know, you made more money than everyone after that '98 Olympia, didn't you?
Of course, yeah.
Ronnie wins the Olympia. You know, Flex is all upset, and then Kevin goes to Europe. How much money did you make in Europe?
Sure, man, I was cranking it out, man. You got to think back then; those shows are paying a lot of money. It's paying good.
I know. And you were what, fourth at that Olympia in '98?
Or in what year?
1998
Mr. Olympia.
Yeah,
I don't probably fourth. I think it's fourth.
Yeah,
but yeah. And I went on tour and I won all the shows. Yeah.
Yeah, and then you went on, and then he goes on the tour and he cleaned because you
were six shows.
You were the biggest I had ever seen you in '98, and you know what? You were holding like a little water at the Olympia, and then you went to Europe and you just dried out, and you were like perfect for those shows.
You get time to practice. You get time to play around with your diet. You know, there's a lot of stuff you can.
Yeah, Nasser was third at that show. Yeah. All right. Story of the year. Here it goes. As we close in on the year 2024, the story of the year has to be the Olympia win of Derek Lunsford defeating the reigning champion, Hadi Choupan, and, you know, becoming, I don't know, what number Mr. Olympia is he? I forget. How many Olympia champs have we had now? Does anyone know?
I don't know.
No one knows. I forget what number he is, but I mean, this has got to be the, you know, the, I guess the win of the year. I mean, Derek has been the only man to ever win two divisions in the Olympia, the 212 Olympia he won, and he won the Open now. He's, you know, young still. He's got youth on his side. For sure, his back shots were the best on stage. There's no doubt about that. I don't think anyone would doubt that. I mean, super nice guy. You know, everyone likes this guy. He's well liked. And give us let's go around the horn. Armand, what's your impression of Derek's win?
It was well deserved. Like in the wrap up, like I said, it could have been given to any one of them. I would have been fine if Hadi, Derek, or Samson got it. And Derek got it. I think he's a really nice guy. I think he has a great physique. But I don't think it's one of those physiques that are just, you know, it's going to be easy probably to knock him off just because his height. So you get someone in there with a little more if Hadi comes back or Samson. But I think he's great. And, you know, I don't know why he's getting all the hate. I think that kind of sucks for him. Like, No, all that.
He's getting hate because he's a nice guy. That's why he's getting hate. You know.
Yeah, and you know, people give him a hard time about his religion. Like, oh, you're taking all the steroids, but you're talking about Jesus, and I'm like, leave the guy alone. Like,
yeah.
They're just picking him apart. It's ridiculous.
By the way, he's the 18th Mr. Olympia. So there we go. Someone. Yeah.
Congrats. You know, I like him, his physique and personality. So that was a good win, and I wish him the best. Yeah.
You know, Kevin, I asked Brad Warren this question, and there's no, you know, there's no shame in saying, admitting the truth. I said, Branch, if you would have, when you, you know, were second behind Jay Cutler at the Olympia, if you had that look on this stage and you were standing next to Derek, who would have won the Olympia? And he said, I would have won. I mean, Kev, when you look back and you know, you were so close to winning the Olympia so many times, I know you can't go backwards, but does it like sometimes say, man, I just was at the wrong place at the wrong time? Because I mean, if you were competing at the peak of your power during some of these Olympias we've had in the last couple of years, you obviously would have been Mr. Olympia.
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's changed hands so many times. Right? I know. And I think because it's changed hands so many times, you know, you're sitting there. I mean, I got second four times.
Right? I know.
Thinking, man, crazy. Jesus. If I was competing today, maybe during that time period, I at least would have had one. Because, right. You know, they're rewarding. They're changing. It's been wow. It's been.
Well, they judge what's up there. Sometimes, some years, it's just not that good. Yeah.
I mean, I think the judging is a lot more fair now, too. I think back then it was a lot of politics involved.
Do you think that Joe Weider intercalated a lot of his politics into the judging?
Yeah, because Joe Weider told me, he said, if my Mr. Olympia loses, then my show is going to be like every other show. And I said, what do you mean? He says, every show out there, there's a new champion every year, and they're winning, you know, different. He goes, but people keep buying tickets. Because they want to come back to see if Mr. Olympia is going to be defeated.
There you go.
He told me that.
I believe it. He was honest.
Exactly what Joe said.
Yeah. Crazy. Well, he owned. You know,
guess what? It made sense to me.
Yeah.
Guess what? Guess what happened, Dave?
What?
Now that aura is gone.
Right.
About the Olympia, like that whole.
Well, now they actually judge different. It. Yeah, they judge it for real now. Yeah,
it doesn't have the hype that it used to have when Joe was around either.
Right now,
you know, it's just different. You know, back then, Mr. Olympia was like that guy was like a superstar. Like, yeah, good God,
right?
You know,
You know what I think it is though, Kevin. You know what? Back in the day, to see Mr. Olympia, to see the best bodybuilders in the world, you had to buy the magazines. Nowadays,
you
go on Instagram. Yeah. You can go on their Instagram, and you can see that they just ate lunch. You know, they went to the diner and had lunch. You know, and you can look at their videos.
Yeah.
You lose it loses the lore. You know,
that's a huge deal.
You saw Dory once a year. You know, that was it.
Armand, that's a huge deal. It's like stop with the online prejudging before the Olympia starts, bro.
It's like everybody had the Marilyn Muscle Machine DVD we watched and, you know, all these different DVDs. And that's all we could get to these people. That's all we knew of them. And it was like mysterious.
How many videos did you sell, Kevin, back in the day? Thousands, probably. Thousands.
Yeah, a lot, man. It was just everybody was sitting
on the side of them today.
sitting on the edge of your seat to see what the Mr. Olympia would look like, to see the prejudging, because you couldn't see him. You know, it was just it built everything up to that day of the show.
Yep.
And if you wasn't at the show, you have to wait till the magazines come out.
You wouldn't even know.
You buy all the magazines just to see him. Yep. But I think if they just stop with the online prejudging, like and I say online. I'm talking about the contestants. They start posting pictures 2 weeks out from a show about how they look in the mirror. They got to stop doing that.
Because they know it influences the judges, Kevin. It's like a marketing campaign for themselves.
But none of them shows up. They don't even show up looking like those photos.
They put filters.
When they're not on stage filter, it's like they don't have the filter on stage. Then it's like, uh-oh.
Yeah, you put this picture on Instagram. You look so good. And then you show up on stage without the filter and people think you're out of shape. But you actually look great. You just... not as good as Instagram because you didn't put the filters on your truck. Hey, Kevin, I want to really thank you for joining us here on New Year's Eve and taking time out of your schedule and your family. And, you know, it was great for catching up with you and shooting the crap. And I only wish you the best in 2024. Congratulations with your company, all your successes. And, you know, you inspired me today. So I know that all the people watching this show are going to feel inspired. I know that you guys on the panel have to be inspired by Kevin, you know, what he said today.
Absolutely.
Well, thank all of you guys, man, for what you guys have done to help the sport be where it is today. And Dave, you know, you and I, we go back 30 years, I think.
Can't believe it. Yeah, 30, you're right.
30 years. 30 years, you know. Yep. So we definitely evolved and grew up together in this sport. Yeah. And I want to say thanks, man. Thanks for just keep pushing it, moving it forward, man. You're doing you got a great platform here, man.
So thank you.
I'm happy to be a part of it. So
thank you.
Happy New Year to all you guys, man.
Happy New Year, guys. And Chris Aceto, I know you're out there with your family. Happy New Year, John Romano, with the family.
Yeah.
Happy New Year,
John.
Roy, Chris,
everybody.
Valentino's out with some friends. So enjoy yourself. Don't go to the Sound Factory, Greg. And we'll see you guys back actually tomorrow for after hours. And we'll
Tuesday.
Do
it. Wait, tomorrow's after hours?
Tuesday. Sorry. Tuesday for after hours. We're almost at Monday. We still have a half hour.
Yeah. Wait, the next back.
Watch the ball drop at your family, you know.
I heard Kevin, you're training MMA now, too.
Is that true?
You
want to fight Mr. G for some charity?
Oh, we didn't. Well, they got that's the next thing. Two famous bodybuilders fighting because now they got the strongman guys. They got Brian Shaw. He's training for a fight in Dubai.
That's right. Yeah.
Really?
In Qatar.
I mean, I think it would be cool for two ex-competitive pro bodybuilders to
Who do you want to see fight each other, though?
Well, I'm just saying to show that there's life after the sport.
How about Dorian versus Kevin to see if Kevin can finally get the title? Dorian trains.
But cool. The whole purpose is to show that there's life after the sport.
Right.
In other words, to show that you're moving forward, and as you get older, you know, keeping fit and doing new stuff, you know. Because bodybuilders are athletic,
George, I like to see people fight because it's entertaining, but it's really not the smartest thing to probably do after 50 years old.
Yeah.
Right, I'm doing it. I'm 66. I'm doing it.
Who said that you're sane? I didn't say you were sane. I said it's not the smartest thing to do. I didn't say.
I know. Look,
who are you fighting?
Huh?
He's always fabricating fights in his mind. He never.
No, I'm not. You're wrong.
He was supposed to fight Big Lenny.
Big Lenny, the guy, you know, he made some disparaging remarks about my business and stuff. So I challenged him to an MMA match.
Now they're friends.
And now, yeah, well, really? He realized that he didn't want to train. He thought he was going to just lift, you know, lift weights and go in and have a match. And you know how that works. It's not going to work too well.
This is who he was going to fight, Kevin.
Hey, did you guys see that new picture of Conor McGregor, like with the belt around his head, with his like cock all bulged out and his tidy whities?
No, is it on his Instagram?
Probably. It's a weird picture he posted. He's got to be.
He looked like he was juicing. Yeah, he got big.
No, so yeah. So moving forward, so Kevin, what happened is that we had a press conference, everything, and then we had gotten him someone to train, you know, paid, and he just didn't follow through. So, kind of quit.
I found a picture, Armand. Hold on, let me watch this.
But I am training for a fight,
you
Dave.
Find it?
I'm going to train.
Yeah,
I'm training for an amateur match. I'm going to be fighting someone in 5 months.
He looks like Flex Lewis in that picture. they look alike.
That's a weird picture.
He got big. Yeah, he definitely got big.
Yeah.
Anyway, all right. Well, I'm gonna let everyone go hang out with their families. Thank you guys, the fans, for joining us. Thank you for all the support over the years. Thank you for all the tips today. And here's to a great 2024. Hopefully, we're gonna have a much better year with a lot less deaths and a lot more positive stuff happening to us. For now, I'm Dave Palumbo, as I say every week, with Heavy Muscle Radio.
The truth hurts.
It sure does. We'll see you guys.
Happy New Year 2022.
Happy New Year.